Welcome to the Res Ed podcast produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. Coming up is an in-focus session with Barry, who's talking with the CEO of High Tech High, and a Res Ed discussion focusing on three different platforms and tools for educators. As ever, we'll kick off with the Global Kids guys and the news and events.
Hey everyone, this is Amira.
And this is Rick.
And we're coming to you live from Global Kids in New York City for your Res Ed news update.
First up, a story that I think is just awesome. There is a First World War poetry archive that has come to Second Life. This is an interesting project that brings together the expertise of the University of Oxford and Second Life. The First World War Poetry Digital Archive and Learning Technologies Group at the University of Oxford have collaborated to bring together a wealth of digitized archival material from the First World War into Second Life. Basically, you are going to be able to experience a virtual simulation of World War I from boot camp to the bunkers to the trenches while you're listening to the actual poets reading their own poetry that was written at the time, or other actors who are, I guess, recreating their voices. So if you want to check it out, you can go to the Frideswidesim, Frideswide. They actually have period uniforms that you can wear so that you blend into the environment. We'll put up the whole URL and links on resed.org.
Next up, there's this research project that seems absolutely fascinating. An article came out this week titled Virtual Worlds Opening Doors for Autistic, and it's all about this thinking head, which is generated by high-tech computer software, and it's teaching autistic children to recognize and respond to facial expressions. It's put on by Flinders University, and it's found that computerized tutors help autistic children improve their social skills and communication more effectively, and they're seeing that these facial expressions are corresponding with specific emotions and really generating a lot of response. The reason behind this is that children with autism often have these difficulties reading body language and nonverbal facial cues, and so this software is really encouraging conversation skills and helping children recognize when someone is bored or interested or wanting to talk. So it's really, really fun, I mean, to learn more about, and the program is now just in its research phase. So while it's not yet being made available to schools or parents or therapists, it's definitely an incredible use of the affordances of virtual technology, and we're going to keep watching it.
And lastly, you might have heard that Second Life has launched their new enterprise solution called, not surprisingly, Second Life Enterprise. Basically, this is a behind-the-firewall application of Second Life that can be used by corporations, educational institutions, nonprofits, anybody, to create your own custom space using the Second Life platform. One of the interesting applications for educators is you can finally bring together mixed age group of avatars, which is very hard to do using standard Second Life or the Teen Grid. You can also import objects that have been created from the main grid of Second Life into your own enterprise solution, and you have full control over the registration and access process. That said, it is a little pricey. Pricing at the corporate level starts at $55,000 to get your own server. There is an educational discount, but that's still pretty steep at $38,000 for educators. For more information, you can go to blogs.secondlife.com, and we'll also have the link up on ResEd.
That's it for this week's news. As always, feel free to send over any news that you have to resedinfo@globalkids.org. We'll make sure to promote what's going on in your educational community to the ResEd community. Thanks, everyone.
This is Barry Joseph of Global Kids with our new ResEd In Focus segment. Today we'll be speaking with Larry Rosenstock, who's the CEO and founding principal of High Tech High, which was first one school and now is a charter management organization that currently runs 9 schools plus 1 graduate school of education in California. His awards include being named an Ashoka Fellow in 2002, and he is fascinated by virtual worlds and wants to keep them tethered to the material world of making and building things. Larry, welcome to ResEd.
Great to be here.
Now, do you guys use in your schools any massively multiplayer games like World of Warcraft or virtual worlds like Second Life or Wyville as part of the curriculum or after school programs?
Well, here in terms of gaming, I have relationships in gaming of several kinds. In terms of school, there is a rule here that you can't make a video game here unless it's educational and not violent. you can't play it, excuse me, unless it's that. So people, and so people do that. Kids have done, had made many different types of games. I've seen some very, very clever games. In particular, I remember one young man who completely programmed the entire game, even the dashboard. He programmed, this is some jaw-dropping from some other more accomplished programmers, of a sailboat at sea. And you could alter the wind condition, you could also make it be motorized if you wanted to, but you would really basically have the experience of being on this sailboat out at sea, for which he wrote, you know, a couple hundred pages of code just to do that. I also am involved with some folks who are making educational MMOs, massively multiplayer online role-playing games. That's kind of an interesting thing where people are trying to allow for the benefit of being in a guild, being in a group, just like kids love to be, and working together to solve a complex mathematical problem in order to get on their quest through the next gate or the next threshold to the next area.
Are you able to tell us a name so we know what to watch out for?
Well, you could watch out for something named Gazillion.
Gazillion. And can you tell us more about, as an educator who's been around longer than most massively multiplayer online games in the virtual world, what do you think about what it means for young people to get the kind of education that they can get in that environment, and how it's different from what they might find from a traditional school or a more progressive school like High Tech High?
Well, I think that first of all, this is where kids are swimming. You know, this is where they already are. So there's a lot of us who would feel, you know, like my grandmother used to say, go out, meet people, they won't bite. I think there's just some kind of anxiety that somehow that this is really, there's going to be something lost by doing so. But these are kids who are totally social and totally in the world. It's just remarkable to me how much of this, how prevalent it is for kids, really even across all socioeconomic strata. I have an advisee who, we all have 15 advisees, we all do home visits with all of our advisees, and we've got this young man who he lives in a 450-square-foot house in Barrio Logan. He's got 8 family members in over 4 generations in a 450-square-foot house. He has a dirt front yard with chickens, and he has high-speed internet connection. So I'm not a matrician about how much that penetration is, but I'm seeing much more of that penetration in homes. Here's another example. I have an advisory group, as I just said, and of 15 kids, and this is, shows how old wave I am. A few years ago, I said to them before the summer, I said, okay, here's a question for all of you. You got a choice. You can either, imagine you're in a cabin in the Maine woods for the summer, and you've got a choice between having a TV or having a computer. Which would you take? And about 6 of them in unison said, high-speed internet connection? You know, point being, that's an old fogey question. That's not a problem, you know. There's no choice. We can have both, right? That's another.
And they knew what to ask. Yeah. Now, before we let you go, Larry, is there anything you can tell us about the upcoming LEGO Universe, which I believe you've been involved with? Is it as a consultant? Is that right?
Yeah, I can't tell you too much about it except the fact that it's, you know, it's obviously I've been to LEGO in Denmark. It is a, you know, they when I was there once, the gentleman from LEGO who spoke to us said, "We want you to think of LEGO as more than something as a parent that you step on in the dark in the middle of the night and hurt yourself," right? And I think that everyone will see that is becoming more and more the case, that it's more than something that you step on in the middle of the night. All right?
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you for speaking with the Red Hat community today.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Rick Panganiban of Global Kids with another ResEd discussion for you. It's a particularly interesting discussion, at least from my perspective. We're talking with 3 different companies, organizations that are offering different kinds of platforms and tools that we think will be of interest to educators today. In particular, we're talking about Second Life Enterprise, Heritage Key, and EduSim, although our conversation might range from that. We'll see where it goes. So we have, first of all, Terrence Cummings from Linden Lab.
Hello,
John
Rick.
Hey, Terrence. John Himoff from Resible.
Hi.
And Rich White from the Greenbush Educational Service Center.
Hi, guys.
First, we'll start with Terence, and I think I want all of you to respond this in turn. Just describe briefly what your new platform is or new tool set is, and how that specifically might apply to educators, how they might take best advantage of it. So briefly, Terence is a former consultant at McKinsey and Company, and he's helps to shape the corporate strategy for Linden Lab. This work usually includes analyzing potential partnership opportunities, customer acquisition efforts for organizations looking to develop solutions using the SL platform. He primarily focuses on educational customers, as well as the educational use of Second Life as an e-learning platform. So in a nutshell, Terence, what is this new Second Life Enterprise, and how does that differ from Second Life as people might already know it?
So essentially, just starting kind of what the challenge was, I think initially is that as everyone knows, Second Life is it's a 3D virtual world, extremely immersive, interactive, and it allows for a lot of creative expression and a lot of freedom. But one thing that people found was that for a number of reasons, it would be extremely beneficial to have Second Life to be able to sit behind your firewall or at least on your premises to give you control over the grid, etc. And so that's why we developed Second Life Enterprise. We do take the Second Life software, we put it onto a server and then put it behind your premises. So it gives you account management control. You can bring in accounts with real names. You can bulk upload accounts, bring on a number of users into the same environment. And it gives you grid control over things like creating regions, bringing down regions, bringing up regions. So you could have, let's say, 50 regions that are not all live, but that are hosted on your server, on your premises. And while you can only have up to 8 regions live on one system right now, you can then, for different scenarios, let's say educational scenarios, like you have a physics island or you have anatomy island, or even an island that's used by maybe parent-teacher conferences, that kind of thing, you can bring up and down those different scenarios. So that's the beauty of what Second Life Enterprise does provide in a nutshell. And we think for educators, this solves a couple specific challenges they had. One is just the mixed age environment that you can't right now get extremely effectively on either our main grid or Teen Second Life. And so that's a big piece that it solves. We've also had educators come on and inquire because of things like copyright issues. There are firewall issues. And I think overall, it's just that it gives them an added level of security and control that's really valuable to the educational community.
Nice. And can you say anything in particular about the price point and how that might apply to educational institutions? I know that there's this, I believe, 55K figure that has been talked about, and I know for some organizations that's quite a stretch. And are there going to be any particular allowances or particular arrangements for educators?
So we completely understand the education community as far as either budgetary constraints or just the flexibility of budgets are very different, and so we do give a discount off of the initial price of a it would, so we bring it down to $38,500 actually as the opening price, which is still a price tag certainly, but we're willing to discuss use cases with you, like specific use cases with the organization that's looking to buy, and then work out what that might look like, whether it's a K-12 organization, a library, or university, because they have different and varying budgetary constraints.
Nice, thank you. Now let's move on to John and talk a little bit about Resible and some of the stuff that they're doing on a Second Life-like environment, I guess you could say. John describes himself as probably watching The Matrix a bit too often and thinking about how the online experience will continue to change and be more about how people want to interact with information and each other. You might know Resible from their Greenies home experience in Second Life. I thought that was incredibly hilarious and wonderful experience, which has hosted more than 2.5 million visitors. They're actually have ventured off the SL grid with their new Heritage Key solution, which is an online community where visitors can go virtual and experience, at least at this point, King Tut's treasures and other ancient world artifacts. So, John, why don't you tell us a little bit about like what Heritage Key offers for educators?
Well, I think the first thing that's worth noting is that we, while having a lot of experience developing and creating virtual world content, we looked at Heritage Key as an online community where the virtual piece is not perhaps the center of it, but something that adds a lot of value to it. And I think this was much more in line with our ambition to focus on the 3D web or the metaverse, but in some sense, it's about creating a community around a certain type of content. Heritage Key is focused on ancient world places, so Egypt, Rome, Greece, China, stuff that's really old. And I think that was kind of our attempt to start to build this idea of real-time community. So it wasn't that the virtual piece was the beginning and end of it, but it was more something that was part of the mix. And, that's kind of how we have that set up right now.
Nice. So right now, King Tut is the only experience that's available on Heritage Key, but you have these other ones you also are working on, right?
Yeah. We'll be working on quite a few coming out in next year. So wow. We try to give a good coverage of different areas you could explore from around the world. And rather than make them just like museums, we have this idea of making them sort of as time machine where you can travel back and forth through time and space or place. Because I think the part of what we're after for education is trying to make it a little more engaging. And this combination of role play, simulation, and reconstructions really captures people's imagination in a way that just increases their interest in the subject matter.
Absolutely. Well, if I could put in my own plug, I'm particularly excited about the Chinese Terracotta Warriors.
Yeah, that's really great stuff. And it's amazing that China is so filled with cultural heritage, but really outside of China, it's not really that well known. So there's a huge amount of scope for even just making videos and collecting articles and information, which we do on the site, but then also building these virtual experiences where people can obviously explore and meet other people, learn about things.
Nice. So moving on from these two sort of Second Life type applications, I think I wanted to have Rich White talk a little bit about what they offer at the Green Bush Educational Service Center out of Kansas. Rich, you do primarily your work in running actual school programs within Kansas. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually do. We're on site on the Green Bush campus, and also we'll push those out to classrooms when appropriate. A lot of our work is, still pilot, like most of this stuff. But we've seen a lot of promise in what we've kind of put out there. Green Bush has been in the education business for a long time, about 30 years for the K-12 sector. So. We understand the classroom and teachers, and then the emerging classroom technologies, and see really these virtual worlds as a very powerful and emerging domain within the classroom. The EduSim platform is something we kind of started exploring about 3 years ago, and we really didn't know what we were doing at first. We knew that. It was exciting and interesting, and we did have students on site, some middle school students, and so we introduced the platform to them. It was a Croquet Open Cobalt based platform, and realized we had interactive whiteboards all over the place, and slowly realized that there was a nice convergence between the interactive whiteboards and the Cobalt spaces. One of the things we really liked also about the Croquet environment was the peer-to-peer based architecture, so that each student could basically have their own islands, their own building spaces, their learning space. Wow. And then they could ad hoc connect to each other and create groups within the group. And so that was kind of the beginning of the EduSim project with the students. Another really neat thing about the world as it's about the platform as it's developed Open Cobalt as a project now has about 15 developers, about 5 core developers, but it's really taken on some a life of its own and has really pushed the Croquet platform quite a ways up the road in terms of. A student now can take their world that they're building and save it immediately out to a server so that other people can load those world templates basically up and then invite other users within their space. It supports SketchUp and the Collada format, so it's pretty powerful with that. It supports drag and drop, so those models that they create, they can drag and drop on the models or regular images, 2D media, images and video and audio also. So we're still learning a lot.
What in particular about the interactive whiteboard do you think changes the experience versus having the kids interact through a traditional sort of keyboard and mouse interface?
Well, I think for starters, one thing we realize is most schools in this area do not have the one-to-one laptops. They'll have computer labs, but usually those labs have some pretty ancient computers in them. But one thing that most schools do have in this area are the interactive whiteboards and a powerful computer attached to it. And one of the things with our middle school leadership group, their role is to really go back to the classroom and introduce what they learn at Greenbush to their classmates in their classrooms. So we had to kind of one of the things we had to consider was that these kids would be going back to schools that didn't have laptops or one-to-one type environments. But we found though that it's a very powerful, it lets the kids touch the interactive the 3D virtual learning objects. It kind of lets them as they're modifying their space, other kids at their desks on their computers, because a lot of our stuff on site does take place in a computer lab with the interactive whiteboard up front. And so the kids at their computers could connect to the whiteboard and interact with the students that were collaborating up front. And then we would kind of rotate. The projects we've done with the middle school kids were a Mars simulation. Last year we did a eco city where they had to build a environmentally friendly city. So
nice.
So
nice.
Those are, yeah. So
yeah, I can. I mean, to me, one of the applications I could see is just the idea of a young person standing in front of their peers and manipulating objects through the whiteboard is a very different experience than just calling them from their desks and having them do things from their computers on their desks. There's this sort of stand and present sort of thing that's a different dynamic, I guess, for a teacher.
Yeah, it really is. And sometimes, the keyboard and the mouse, just learning how to use those to manipulate a 3D environment can kind of, seem awkward. Or when they can directly go up and kind of just move a thing with their hand in the position that they want it. It's just a lot more native, it seems like, to the student.
Yeah, it's very kinesthetic, yes.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what's on the horizon. Obviously, a lot of educators are very, very interested in knowing where these technologies are going, where they should be spending their resources, spending their time. What are you guys observing as you're seeing this field or seeing the new institutions coming in? First of all, is it growing, and where are you seeing the most interest?
Okay, well, I think that this is eventually going to be a huge new classroom media. As soon as places like Greenbush and places like London Labs and others can kind of figure out there is this huge psychology to get over with the classroom. One, they don't have a lot of time, and the question we get a lot of is how does this help test scores? So, once we get past those two barriers, which are huge, we're on a good footing, and teachers are willing to learn new ways to do things. And I think the interactive whiteboards are a great example of that. Teachers have come a long way with using that type of hardware in their classroom. Every student has one. And so now it's pretty much just, getting to the point where companies, like I mentioned, Greenbushes and London Labs and others can teach teachers how to teach and provide experiences within these environments.
Yeah, so it's making it a normal part of the everyday school experience, using these tools.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, you wanted to say something about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think with education, obviously teachers are very focused on the experience inside the classroom. And I think I agree that new tools and technologies are definitely going to help. We're a little more focused on the content side, because the technology and the platform can be as powerful as anything, but if it's not compelling content, then obviously that's going to be a big showstopper as well. Mm-hmm. But I think also the idea that learning is beyond the classroom, I think, is very important as well. What we think is that especially in younger kids, they're actually consuming a lot more information concurrently. So they have a lot of threads. They want to be Twittering. They want to be on email. They want to be experiencing stuff. So the pace in which they're eager to absorb information is significantly greater than maybe stuff that older people like me were dealing with when we were kids. So I think the dynamic of how they do it, there's like a revolution waiting there, because the pace of just delivering stuff single threaded to people sitting down, making them listen, you know, that just isn't going to work for kids, I don't think.
Yeah, definitely. It's a definitely different learning environment than even the experience of kids even, you know, eight years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Terrence, Sorry, go ahead, John.
I just want to throw another thing, which I think sits around more the technology story, which I think is probably the biggest issue that educators should be aware of, is the open source software revolution. Mm-hmm. And EduSim sitting on OpenCroquet and COBOL, and we're working with OpenSim and Drupal and a lot of other stuff. For me, this is the revolution that educators need to embrace in terms of how they acquire and use software, because fundamentally the open source is more cost effective and more flexible and less risky. And I think that's really, for me, the big point to make.
I think
Having a range of licensing arrangements from free to GPL to open source to some standard licensing solutions is something that all educators, I think, need to learn a whole lot more about, whether it relates to virtual worlds or their whatever web-based technology they're using or other applications they have on their desktop computers. Definitely another really interesting conversation we'd love to have another day. We're almost out of time, so I just wanted to see if what Terrence is observing at Linden Lab in terms of the educators who've come to you about either the enterprise solution or, you know, UT, University of Texas and their massive SIMs that they're launching now on the main grid. What are you guys seeing over there?
So I think I agree on most of the points that have been stated so far as like the psychology part of it, of, you know, virtual worlds actually being a great resource to use. I mean, I think we're getting over the hump there, and I think that's great to see. And at least within Linden Lab, the organizational adoption of educators is amazing, and I really think the next step for us to take now is to better make sure that the adoption within organizations is large. And then secondly, to make sure we're taking more of like the students' approach to things and ensuring that we have the right tools to not only support the administrators, which I think something like Second Life Enterprise does, but then also working with educators within the community to make sure that we actually integrate with other products and make sure that we really have the right content, et cetera, for students. And so I think that's really the next level for us is, and this builds off a little bit of the open source conversation, not at all saying that, you know, we are not open source and not saying that, you know, that's where we're necessarily going, but if we're not going to be there, to make sure that we can truly integrate with other products and that we can be used by other products and that we do take the community suggestions in hand and, you know, start to work with them.
Excellent. Well, Terrence, John, Rich, thank you so much for a very interesting conversation. And for all of these links and other notes, you will see them on resed.org. And thanks for your time. Again, this is Rick Panganiban for Global Kids. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. That was great.
All right, everyone. We're up and back for your events calendar. First off, coming up this week is this season's ResEd Meetup. It's happening in Second Life, and it's a simulcast of the Power of Youth Voice. It's a public forum. It's happening this Wednesday, November 18th, 4 p.m. Second Life time, and it's going to bring together experts in digital media and learning to share their research and experiences using digital media in and outside the classroom. Really amazing speakers. Renee Hobbs, the founder of Media Education Lab and Temple University, is going to be there. Nicole Pinkard, the founder of Digital Youth Network and DePaul University professor. Connie Yowell is going to be moderating the event. It's just going to be fantastic, and ResEd community members are very much encouraged to come in, watch the virtual simulcast, which will be taking place on MacArthur Island in the amphitheater, and the teleport link and all details are available on ResEd's event listing.
Also coming up very soon is a Women's International Community Conference happening in Second Life, sponsored by the Ohio State University. That'll be happening on Saturday, November the 21st, through Sunday, November 22nd, beginning at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Standard Linden Time.
And lastly, we've got this Conscious Unconference that we've been talking about. It looks amazing. It's put on by the U.S. Holocaust Museum. It's happening in Washington, D.C. this next month, December 5th. It's a Saturday, and it's going to look at the different ways that problems, practicalities, opportunities of social media to further the missions of institutions of conscience, those concerned with violence, atrocities, human rights, and related issues. Information on that is available on the ResEd site. If you have events that you'd like to promote, please go ahead and send those to resedinfo@globalkids.org, or feel free to add them yourselves to the event calendar on resed.org, and we'll be sure to mention them in our upcoming podcasts. That's it from us. Have a great week, everyone.
Take care.
All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org.